Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Getting engaged is a moment worth cherishing. A one-of-a-kind ring that you design at Blue Nile can help your love sparkle. Just choose your diamond and setting. When you've found the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Finding the right engagement ring can be nerve-wracking. At Blue Nile, you'll have the expert guidance needed and a diamond guarantee that ensures you're getting the highest quality at the best price. Cherish all of life's moments and save up to 30% at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Does Monday at the office feel like a storm? Not with Microsoft Copilot. That feeling when Copilot gets everyone up to speed instantly? It's sunny again. When Copilot simplifies complex data so your teams can act, that sun's shining on a beach. And when Copilot uncovers hidden insights, you're on that beach with your people and you find buried treasure. That's Microsoft Copilot. Learn more at Microsoft.com/AI for all.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Good morning and welcome to this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. It's been a little bit, but to catch up, we have, of course, the man who breaks down film, friend of mine, Ryan Holmes. Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's a good morning in bright, sunny Southern California.
Yes, it is. 37 degrees here in lovely Sheboygan, Wisconsin. That may not seem like a lot to most, but to us, it's 80 degrees because it's not below 10 degrees and it's not freezing. Snow melting is the greatest sound in the world to a Wisconsinite.
Yeah, I shouldn't tell you, it was 81 in L.A. yesterday.
Oh, I can't wait for summer. Summer is a good thing. Now, one of the things we definitely need to discuss, because apparently there's been, I'm not going to even use the actual name of the source because the source is rather, not sketchy, but rather sideways, but reports of a Derek Carr extension. What are your thoughts when you hear the rumor mill?
That's a tough one. The first thing that comes to mind is hopefully we're not talking, you know, a five-year at $30 million per, so five-year $150 million deal with, you know, 70, 80 million guarantee, because that's going to tie into the organization for the next probably 5-6 years before they could get out of it. So he's going to be tied to Gruden for the rest of his tenure if that happens. I'm thinking it's more in the line of, hey, let's guarantee 2021 and 2022. Let's lower the cap number, add some voidable years, and basically just lock him in for two more years and kind of go at that pace versus doing a normal extension and tying him to the team for, like I said, 5 or 6 years. So hopefully, we're talking about lowering the cap number, converting maybe something into a signing bonus to lower it for 1 year while adding on voidable years at the end. That's the only way I see this happening. I don't think they're in a position to increase his cap number up into the $30, $35 million range at this point.
That is the most logical approach because, you know, as I do, there's a rather sizable contingent of fandom and the fan base who are blind loyalists. They think this is some validation of Carr as a quarterback. In all honesty, it's more of a financial matter. It's more of a, this is a tenuous marriage and it might be cheaper to keep him right now.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think his cap number this year is around $22 million. So if you could drop him down to $1 million, take, you know, $20 million or so, add 2 or 3 years and spread that out over, you know, let's say a 5 year period, but make 2 of those years voidable, or maybe even just tell them, hey, we're going to guarantee your salary in 2022 if you do this for us in 2021. Obviously, there'd be a cap hit in 2 years if they wanted to move on, but it wouldn't be terrible as it would if they went ahead and just said, hey, let's tack on 5 years at $150 million, because then you'd have to go to the route of, if he doesn't make it to the playoffs in the next year or two, you're going to have to go to the route of eating $30, $40 million on your cap to move him, and this team's not in a position to do that.
And like you said, this is John Gruden tying his entire second, not entire, but a large chunk of his second tenure with the Raiders to a quarterback that, this is a bold move. This is, even if you're not a Carr fan or supporter, you got to kind of look at Gruden like, maybe this is the guy he truly believes in.
Potentially. My fear is Gruden's going to create that cap room, and instead of spending it on defense, he's going to make a run at, like we've talked about, Juju Smith-Schuster, or try to add some pieces to the offense rather than going to the defense and really addressing the problem.
If they don't add to the defense, it's more of there's no level of criticism that John Gruden should be absolved from. This is a defense that is terrible, and it was badly schemed, it was badly planned, and I think what this does, what the extension does, like you said, it ties Carr to Gruden, but also insulates Gruden from the heat that somehow, because people don't really understand that John Gruden is actually the one who calls the shots on this team, heat for Mike Mayock. Mike Mayock needs a win. They need wins in the draft. They haven't had a win in the longest time. I know Max Crosby, fourth round pick, I understand that, but they're looking at guys, they're looking at five first-round picks, and of those five, you have to excuse Ruggs, you have to excuse Arnett, because as rookies right now, there's not enough of a sample size. So let's take the three from the year previous. Only one of those guys will probably see a second contract with the Raiders. Do you agree?
It's looking that way. At this point, I would say Jacobs is the betting favorite. And then when you really think about it, running backs in the second contract, outside of the recent success of Derrick Henry, haven't really done anything. They haven't panned out. So I don't see Farrell, and we've talked about it ad nauseum on this podcast. I don't see him performing enough to get that fifth-year option picked up, let alone the second contract. He's going to test the market. Abram, the jury's out on Abram. If he has a good year this year, I could see him possibly doing that, but we're going to have to see if the discipline there and he can stay in his responsibilities and coverage and be more of a sure tackler in the open field. So we'll see, but it's not looking good. And like you said, I think the heat is on Mayock. If they don't make the playoffs this year, Mayock's on the hot seat.
And I know when Mike Mayock took the job, just on an internal level, he probably wanted to see if he could do or execute his draft strategy in real time for, like, have, like, instead of having it where it's hypotheticals, this is like going live and actually having the actual team to do this with. And the lure of going back to the NFL Network when, if they make the playoffs again, I can't imagine what the heat's going to be like. And some of this is kind of on Gruden because, and more importantly, Mark Davis. Mark Davis has empowered Gruden to run unchecked through the organization. Unchecked. The only person that John Gruden reports to is Mark Davis. And Mark Davis seems like he's rather enamored with John Gruden. And it's funny because I watched the 30 for 30 with Gruden, with Al Davis and Pete Rozelle. And first, the CGI was creepy. Second, I don't see Al at any point extending a 10-year contract to anybody.
No, Al would roll over coaches in a year and a half, 2 years, if they weren't winning and doing what he wanted. So it's interesting that Mark Davis has tied himself to Gruden for 10 years, but that's what it took to get him out of the booth. And you mentioned Mayock, you know, trying to execute his draft rankings and selecting a player in real time with a real organization. It hasn't panned out like many people had hoped after the first, you know, 10 games of last year. We thought he was a genius. He had all these rookies contributing, but none of them really took a step forward in 2021. Now, we'll find out in the new defensive scheme if those young defenders get a lot better, then maybe we change our mind. But when you just have to sit down and break down what players they took, where they took them, and the positional value, it's not looking good for Mayock over the last two drafts.
When I look at the Josh Jacobs situation, I think Josh Jacobs is a good back. I really do. He's a good back. He's not a great back. He is not a... I hate to say this. He may not be a top 10 back. If he's in the top 10, 8, 9, 10. At that. Not because of anything he has in the butt, but one, the injuries this young, that's kind of a red flag. And two, the fact that he doesn't have home run speed. I'm not saying that every back should be able to take it 90 to the house, but he's going to get you those 25-yard runs, which would be good, but he's not going to run away from anybody. And I know that he plays a style that Gruden prefers, but when the second contract looms, do they really want to invest in that? Because you have to think about it. If he's getting injured now at 21, 22, what does 25, 26 look like?
No, that's fair. And the biggest disappointment I've had in Jacobs is the pass catching. Because coming out of Alabama, he was catching seam routes, balls down the field, making adjustments. We just haven't seen him, A, run those routes, or B, contribute in the passing game as much as many people thought he would. It's basically just swing routes and angle routes out of the backfield. So I'd like to see them get more creative in using him and using that part of his game. And it's fair to say he's somewhere in that 8 to 10 range right now. That's not a bad thing against him. He is a good back, but like you said, is he a difference maker that's going to be Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, Alvin Kamara? Is he in that group? Not yet. He can ascend to that group, but he's going to have to stay healthy. He's going to have to play 16 games. He's going to have to be able to go for, 100, 150 yards pretty consistently a game. And I think he only had 100-yard game on all of last year, and the run blocking wasn't great, but if you're top five back in the league, you can make, what they say, chicken poop out of chicken soup, basically. But he's a good player. Is the draft value of taking a running back in the first round at that point, at where this team was? I don't know. We'll see. He's got about a year and a half to prove it, or else he's probably not going to get a second contract based on the injury history.
I honestly, and I catch hell for this statement, but I would much rather have Ronald Jones than Josh Jacobs.
I don't know if I go that far. Ronald Jones can't catch football out of the backfield. He can't pick up a blitz, but he's faster. He's more elusive in the open field. You got to think what Gruden, too, like what he did with Cadillac Williams that you've brought up in the past on this podcast. He's running Jacobs into the ground a little bit the last 2 years, and those injuries have really caught up. They definitely need a second back this year, whether that's in free agency or the draft, to kind of take some of those carries away from Jacobs. And hopefully he's fresher in the red zone. But he, like you mentioned, he's not a home run guy. He's not even going to get you a lot of 25-yard carries. It's more yards after contact and things like that with him. But you can't commit. Let's just say Carr gets extended and it's $25 to $30 million. Are you ready to pay a running back in 2 years? Are you going to give Jacobs? He's going to want somewhere, $10, $12, $13 million a year. I'm not committing that to a running back if I have a quarterback making $35 million or $30 million.
Plus, if I'm the Raiders, I mean, that's what you said, it's running back by committee would work with this team because of the way that John Gruden likes to pound the ball. Speaking of John Gruden and pounding the ball in the red zone, do you think that he's cognizant of the fact that people are questioning his aggressiveness?
Oh, absolutely. I think John Gruden reads the headlines and he tries to act like he's not up to date on social media and all that, but I guarantee you he knows everything that's written about him. He might have someone in the front office looking for that information and relaying it to him, but I'm sure John Gruden, with the ego he has, knows exactly what's going on. People are talking about out there whether he can make those adjustments and in 2021 and be more aggressive in the red zone. And a lot of it too comes down. Carr's very conservative in the red zone. So you have a mix of a very conservative play caller with a very conservative quarterback that's led to a lot of field goals. So hopefully there can be changes there. Hopefully they make additions to the offense, whether it's a big-bodied wide receiver, more Foster Moreau, more Bryan Edwards. But, no, they have to score touchdowns on this offense next year. They can't be converting in the 50 to 60% range in the red zone. They need to get up there around 70, 75% touchdown rate, and then you can really see where this team is at.
I want to talk about Bryan Edwards for a minute because you brought him up, and for what the Raiders lack in the red zone as far as that big body he would provide, and do you think that Carr's conservative approach and sometimes finicky outlook with younger receivers cost the Raiders last year, and do you think that that will continue this year?
So that's a two-part question. I'll say yes, I do think it cost him at certain points where he wanted to just go to Waller or Renfro because he had trust in those guys and didn't really show a lot of trust in Ruggs or Edwards. And Edwards wasn't on the field much. And two, I think a lot of it is play design and play call. You didn't really see them running a lot of fade routes, a lot of slant routes in the red zone. And Carr's done that in the past with Crabtree when he had a guy that he really trusted. So I think it's a combination of the play design, not having those kind of routes built in on the play call, Carr not audibling into some of those routes when he's down there, when he has, you know, man coverage on the outside, and then just not having the physical bodies. And we've talked about when they go to 11 personnel in the red zone, it's Ruggs, it's Renfro, it's Aguilar. None of those guys are running slant routes and winning in the red zone. None of those guys are winning fade routes. So they have to create separation quickly in tight space, and there's just not a big catch radius with any of those guys. And they just didn't really use Waller on those kind of routes. I don't know why they don't run two or three fade routes in the red zone to Waller, or even slants with his big body. You can't cover him one-on-one. So hopefully we see a lot more of that in the red zone play designs next year. And it will help getting Edwards on the field and putting a big body out there, so maybe they can run those concepts.
I just found it weird that the Raiders use Waller as a wide receiver for 80 yards on the field. But when they hit their red zone, they forget. I'm like,
it's interesting too how many times that he stays in on third downs and key situations and blocks too. It's kind of just a sixth blocker. He did that more than people think. So they need to get him out wide and have him running routes every down. He should never be staying in the block. If you want a guy to stay in and block, then get another tight end and let Moreau do that. It shouldn't be Darren Waller.
It should never be Darren Waller. He is their most targeted player. It just, that's where John Gruden's play calling bothers me and his approach, because they're going to target Waller a bunch of times up and down the field. They get where they're in scoring range. You're really going to have them chipping in or stay in and just kind of do that where he would present such a matchup nightmare for anyone singled up on the outside. And just, he would destroy anyone on the outside. Let him, for lack of a term, let him be great. And it's just, Gruden's approach it's frustrating. And I didn't think that John Gruden, who was in the booth for, a decade, I thought that he would come back with a little more fire, a little more aggressiveness, and it's been the polar opposite, and I don't understand. And if we transition to the defense, I look at Gus Bradley as a step up from Paul Gunn for the simple fact that he's going to try to fight for players or try to fight for acquisitions that he can fit into a scheme, where Paul Gunther seemed like he was rather rigid. There was an interview, was it Barstool, was it Will Compton? And he kind of explained Gunther's approach or lack thereof and how it was deleterious to the game plan. Bradley strikes me as somebody who will be able to be a little more flexible. What is the one aspect of Gus Bradley's defense that you're most looking forward to?
I believe it's the play of the secondary. Everywhere he's gone, he's gotten Pro Bowl seasons out of late round guys, whether that's Richard Sherman, obviously Cam Chancellor, I believe, was a fourth rounder. Casey Hayward went over there from Green Bay and turned into a really good player. Chris Harris had a good year there last year. Derwin James, Rayshon Jenkins had a good year. Mike Davis had a good year. So he's always been able, him and the combination of Ron Millis, the DB's coach, wherever they've gone, they've gotten production out of the secondary. And that's honestly one of the things the Raiders haven't had since Charles Woodson's first stint at corner. And we could say Nnamdi Asamoah, but the teams were so bad that teams would just run the ball, not throw his way. But just, you know, production, ball skills, interceptions, turnovers, those kind of things they've been able to do. So can he replicate that success with more talented players, arguably, because they went higher in the draft in Abram, Mullen, Arnett? I fully expect him to go sign a cornerback, veteran too, cornerback, whether that's Jason Verrett, Richard Sherman, someone who's played in this system for him, but still a good player that can help those guys out and be a starter opposite of Mullen or Arnett, whoever wins that job. But I don't think they can go into next year and say, okay, we're just going to line up with Mullen, Arnett, and Robertson in the slot, assuming Joyner gets let go. So you're going to see DBs added to this team. But primarily that's where I think we're going to see most of the success. I want to say the Chargers only gave up one 300-yard passing game last year. Now, whether they can get the pass rush out of the front four because he's not going to blitz. And another key is going to be if you're not going to be blitzing and the secondary improves and play improves, the coverage of the linebackers is going to become key because then teams are going to start taking advantage over the middle, the tight ends, the running backs. So Littleton hopefully can be that player, but you're going to need a second linebacker. I don't know if Kwiatkowski can hold up in those kind of situations. He's more of just a spot dropper and just, you know, playing a small zone. Can he do it full time, especially when teams are going to try to match him up against better tight ends and running backs? So we'll see. It should be interesting. It should be better than Paul Gunther's defense. Gus Bradley has a better track record of success, more success at multiple stops, whereas Gunther kind of just took over for Marvin Lewis, who was still kind of running that defense for a while as well, and really didn't do much in Cincinnati outside of one of the 3 or 4 years he was there, and then obviously his tenure with the Raiders was not good.
The Chargers defense last year gave up 300 back-to-back weeks to Tampa Bay and New Orleans. From that point on, they didn't give up anything more than 276 yards. In fact, 7 of their 16 games, they gave up less than 200.
The Raiders give that up in the first half for the last 15 years. So
exactly.
Games under 300 are going to be interesting. Hopefully that they can. And a lot of that, though, is predicated on tackling. So that's balls getting dumped underneath, playing zone coverage, and guys rallying and getting the guy on the ground. And whether the Raiders can do that, we'll see how their tackling improves in the open field, because they've missed just about as many tackles as anyone in the league over the last 5 or 6 years, too.
Entering this year, are you sold on Trayvon Mullen being a value contributor, or do you think he's playing out the string contract-wise?
I think he can be a contributor. I think he can be a solid number two. Now, as I've mentioned before, I don't think he's ever going to be a shutdown number one guy. You're going to put him on the other team's number one and take him out of the game plan. But in the right scheme, and this is a good scheme for him, he's a longer leg, big body guy. You know, playing a lot of cover one and cover three fits into what he's going to want to do. He could be a solid number two. And maybe you don't need a number one. If you have two solid number twos, you can get away with that if the pass rush improves. So I think they're going to attack the pass rush in free agency, add one corner, a veteran, and then hopefully get a safety. There's a million safeties on the market this year that can come in and help this team pretty quickly. So you could see a pretty good turnaround in the secondary, I think, this year.
Now, who has recently, like, caught your eye via the draft? Like, any prospect, no matter what levels, or just someone like, oh, okay, this guy would make a decent fit on either side of the ball?
The more I think about it, the more I think the defensive end from Georgia is a fit in this game, Olajuwon, Azeez Olajuwon. At first, I wasn't really on board with him. The more you watch, the more he has pretty good hands. He's got some pass rush instincts. He's got some explosion to get around the corner. And I think a lot of teams are going to see him as a 3-4 outside linebacker. But I think in Gus Bradley's defense that he could play the Leo position. And the more I look at these defensive ends, I think that he's rising. I don't like Quiddy Pay. I don't like Russo. I'm not a big Jalen Phillips guy. I like Zaven Collins, but he's not the natural pass rush skills. He doesn't have the natural pass rush skills. He's a more versatile defender. But I just think Olajuwon, every time I try to line up the defensive ends, I keep moving him up and up and up the list. So I don't know if he's a stretch at 17. But there's a chance he might not even get to 17 when we get to the end of April.
A Ojulari is the guy that, I mean, it's the guy. It is watching film and watching all the, that's a guy. And you called it where it's a perfect fit. It is a perfect fit. You broke it down and you explained the Chris Clemens, Bruce Irvin, their history and Gus Bradley's defense. And I remember going back and I re-listened to that podcast and I took notes and I watched Aziz Ojulari and went back and watched as many Seahawks games as I could find. Dead on accurate. And that is a guy I want the Raiders to pick. And you mentioned a couple of names like Kwity Paye. I don't feel good about drafting a raw defensive end with talent, but zero technique as far as pass rushing. None. I don't feel good about Rousseau where he gets washed out of how many run plays. And
if you watch him, most of that sack production were coverage of sacks in 2019, and they were from the inside where he's going against guards. I don't see him as a natural, you know, supreme edge rusher day one. He's got a lot of work to do.
And you mentioned Jalen Phillips. This was a player who had retired because of injuries and concussions, and this was when he was at UCLA. He came back to play at Miami, and people were like, well, he's been healthy ever since, which is fine. I worry about what the physical toll is going to be on him at the next level. Is he going to suffer the same amount of concussions, or is something going to happen? Where Ojulari is just, it fits. It fits perfectly. Now, it being Thursday, you know, people like to do the throwback Thursday. I got a throwback question for you. What one Raiders player that may not have garnered as much attention but was one of your favorites to watch?
This is an easy one for me. I'm going to say Terry McDaniel. I loved watching Terry McDaniel growing up. He was a cornerback for the Raider fans out there. He was a first-round pick. It was back in, I want to say, the late 80s. Played, I think he made a few Pro Bowls, but he was a really good lockdown corner for the Raiders for years. He's kind of, you don't hear his name when you talk about Raider cornerbacks. You hear a lot about, you know, Willie Brown, Charles Woodson, those guys. But I liked watching Terry McDaniel, and Lionel Washington was opposite him, and then you had Albert Lewis there for a couple of years. So I'm going to go Terry McDaniel to answer that question.
I'm going to go Jeff Hostetler for the simple fact that
he
got to L.A. after winning the Super Bowl with the Giants, and even though he didn't have the strongest arm, he still fit the concept of the defense because he would throw it deep or throw it deep as he could. Alexander Wright would run under it and somehow, who had awful hands, would still catch it. And for me, Hostetler was, even though he lacked Carr's abundant talent base and skill set, he had that killer instinct that I wish that Carr would eventually develop, where there's a game against the Broncos? Yep, it was the Broncos, because the Raiders had to beat the Broncos to make the playoffs, and then they played the Broncos in the first round. So
I was at both of those games back in L.A. I remember.
Was that 93 or 92?
Yeah, he threw a touchdown. It was 93 or 94. He threw the touchdown to Alexander Wright in the first game to go to the playoffs, and then he threw the bomb to James Jett.
Yes.
And I want to say John Elway didn't play in the playoff games. I think they had their backup,
Hugh Millen.
Hugh Millen, yeah. I remember being at that game. I was sitting in the end zone at the L.A. Coliseum. The first game I ever went to was Raiders Seahawks. It was Rick Meyer's very first game. And I want to say the Seahawks beat him 38-9 or something like that. And then the next two games I went to were, it was a Christmas present, that the game against the Broncos game to get in the playoffs, and then I got tickets to go to the playoff game the next week.
I remember that game I remember those two games because Hostetler got into it, one of the Broncos, and punched him. He punched a Bronco. I remember that, where there was a scrum, and there's the quarterback who should be pulled aside is out there like throwing hands with somebody. And that type of toughness is what I hope that Derek Carr will eventually embrace. Not the having his brothers sit there and have his back, not having his fan. No, like, not saying he should go out and punch anybody, but if somebody gets in his face, he should like stand up and just kind of hold his ground. Now,
do you remember who came off the bench in street clothes in that game during that fight?
Oh, God.
James Trapp. Remember that name?
Yeah, James Trapp was about that life. Olympic.
Yeah, he
gold
came
medalist.
Off the bench of street clothes. Yeah, he was a track guy.
And quick to punch somebody in the mouth. See, it just that type of grittiness is what I hope Carr will embrace. Now, how can people get in touch with you or contact you via social media?
Yeah, they can reach me on Twitter. The handle's at rholm22. It's at rholm22. Shoot me a message. If you have any questions, I can answer them. I do want to bring up one other point when we were talking about Ola Jahre. I've been on the Zaven Collins train since day one. I think he's going to be a better player at the end of the day than Ola Jahre. My concern is scheme fit, that he's so versatile that Collins can play middle linebacker, Sam linebacker, outside 3-4. My concern is getting him in a defense and asking him to wear multiple hats and saying, okay, you're going to play Sam linebacker on first down. You're going to drop down and play Leo on nickel, and just having a guy just move around the defense all that way. I think it would be better off just to take Ola Jahre, say you're the Leo, and just have one guy learn that position and go, and not try to have a piece and try to keep moving him around based on down and distances. I love Collins. I just think Ola Jahre is a better fit the more I think about it.
That works. And you could be found on Twitter on? Is it rholm22?
Yes. Oh, sorry. It's rholm22, R-H-O-L-M-2-2.
You can find us at FPC Raiders on Twitter. As always, Ryan Holmes, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast.
Thank you, and have a good day.
This has been an episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.